Good morning, everybody. As people continue to find their seats, I think we'll go ahead and get started so that our speaker has the full time allotted in order to help us understand. Thank you for joining us for the mental health checkup program this morning. My name is Leslie Stoltz. I work with Johnson & Johnson Innovation J Labs. We are a no-strings-attached, capital-efficient incubator for small companies in the healthcare field to get started so that they only need to pay for the space that they need and they can have a chance to grow and add value and bring new solutions to patients and consumers. So Johnson & Johnson is definitely excited to support this amazing conference. We've been supporting it for 4 years. And we are so focused internally as an organization to supporting women leaders and supporting diversity and inclusion. We have a lot of groups and a lot of people that are focused on that. And it was really interesting to hear the conversations this morning about, Juniper Networks, about how they also have the unconscious bias training, and I think that's so important for the large organizations. When you employ 1 or 200,000 people, it's really important to have that effect for our general community. So as a mother of two adult children who have both struggled with mental health issues and had to find ways to live with them and use them sometimes to their advantage, I'm super excited about hearing what our speaker today, Katie Morton, has to say. Katie has a master's in clinical psychology, and she has a private practice in Santa Monica. She is a therapist and helps a bunch of different people deal with mental health issues, and she's got a lot of notoriety and fame these days from her YouTube channel, and I definitely would recommend that people take a look and listen to some of her videos. I think I'm super excited about hearing what she has to say today. So, Katie, please welcome, and I'm looking forward to it.
Exactly. Good morning, everybody. I'm usually a walker, but since this makes a lot of noise, I'm going to try to keep my dancing to a minimum. And also pray for my laptop that it stays charged, although who likes slides? Nobody likes slides. But thank you so much, Leslie, for the introduction. My name is Katie Morton, and today I'm going to talk to you in a hopefully a lighthearted way that makes sense, all about mental health and how to better manage it. And I will be taking time at the end. Hopefully we'll have a full 20 minutes for questions, just because I know one question can sometimes take 5 minutes to answer, and I want to make sure you all get your questions answered. So if you have anything that I say that you're like, hey, that doesn't make sense, what are you saying, crazy lady? Take a note, and I will try to get through all of them, okay? So the first thing that I want to talk with us about, because whenever we talk about mental health, I think a lot of people, see, I'm already walking quietly. I think a lot of people assume that mental health and mental illness are the same thing, and we use them interchangeably. And I believe that has a lot to do with kind of like the stigma we have with the word illness. Oh, I have an illness. It sounds bad. It sounds like I need a lot of treatment. Things aren't going to get better for me. And so we always use the word mental health because it sounds softer and nicer. But they really are two very different things, and I think it's important that we understand them so that we aren't afraid to say and call it what it is. And now mental health, the way that I like to describe that really, is it's just like our physical health, right? I try to eat healthy sometimes, I try to drink water sometimes, and I try to get enough sleep, and I do all these things, right? We all feel like we're balancing or spinning all these plates, as my mom calls it. You know, you've got all your plates spinning and keeping things going to keep yourself feeling good. And when we have a good mental health day, we're able to do everything we need to do, right? We feel good. We get up. We don't go, ugh, right away, you know? We wake up, we shower, we make it to work on time, all of that stuff, and we feel pretty good. That's when we have a good mental health day and good physical day. And so I think of those in the same way, that we need to take care of our mental health in the same way we take care of our physical health. We need to get checkups, meaning we need to go to a therapist. We should see someone. And if we're taking care of all those things that I just talked about, we're good. We have a good mental health. But it's just important to know that everybody has a mental health. On the other end, we talk about mental illness. And mental illness is when our mental health deteriorates. It's like when we catch a cold. Maybe first I'm like, got a scratch in my throat. I just feel tired. I feel like I'm fighting something. How many people say that all the time? I just feel like I'm fighting something. I don't know what it is. And we start to maybe not sleep as well. Maybe we're burning the candle at both ends. We're doing a lot of things. And then one morning we wake up and we're like, damn it, it caught me. I can't go to work today. I can't do what I need to do. And that's how we know we have a mental illness. We can't do what we need to do. And I think that's just an important thing to remember as I talk about everything that I'm going to talk about this morning, is if we aren't able to do what we need to do every day, that's when we should see somebody. That's when we know that our mental health has turned into a mental illness. And even though I'm comparing physical and mental health, you can't catch a mental illness. Don't get any ideas, okay? But keep that in mind as I talk about things, because if any of you are struggling to do what you need to do, consider seeing someone. I promise therapists aren't scary. We're very nice. We're here to help. That's our whole goal. And even therapists have therapists. And we should, for good reason, right? Okay. Sorry, I'm not... Okay, this is why I don't like slides. Because I'm like, I get rambling on my own conversation. So, overall, when it comes to mental health and mental illness, just know that we all have a mental health that needs tending to. And if we don't, it can become a mental illness. But the question I get asked all the time on my channel, and just from my friends even, and family, and my life, is when does my struggle, so let's say I am not able to do what I need to do, I think I might have a mental health issue, maybe a mental illness. How do I know if that warrants professional help? Professional help sounds scary. It sounds like a lot. I also think it might be expensive. There's all these questions, and we worry about what that would mean. If I told somebody, what would they think about me? Who's worried about that? I know I've worried about that. What if I told somebody that maybe I felt depressed? What would they maybe think? What if I had to tell my boss? And we'll get into all of that stuff today. But the most important thing to know is that I honestly believe that everyone can benefit from some professional health, like help in general. You wouldn't condone someone, or you wouldn't yell at someone and say, why would you do that, if they said they went to get a physical? You wouldn't ask someone why they went to the doctor if they felt sick. So why do we sometimes judge, even if we don't say it out loud, why do we think that or even worry about that when it comes to our mental health? We really need to think of the two the same, because you could argue that our brain is kind of like the whole, you know, the guts of our computer, what makes us actually work. It makes all our decisions, right? So it's kind of important, maybe just a little bit. And so everyone can benefit from therapy, from treatment of any kind, even just a checkup. Like, I personally go to therapy for maybe 2 or 3 months at a time, and then I'll take like a break for 6 or 8 months, and then maybe go back. If I start feeling kind of stressed out, I'm not sleeping well, I'm picking fights with my husband, I do that quite a bit, you know, then I'll find myself going back to try to get more support and just gain some insight into what the heck is going on. So while everyone can benefit, I know many of you are like, I know, blah, 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 you, that's what you do. Of course you're going to say that. But how do I know if I really need it? Like, when do I need professional help? And it kind of goes back to what's the difference between mental health and mental illness. If we aren't able to do what we need to do, you should see someone. You should reach out. You should talk to a friend that maybe you know is in therapy. Word of mouth is the best way to get a referral. And so just for a minute, consider what we're able to do on a good day. Like, I get up on time, relatively. I'm not a morning person. I shower. I make it to work on time. Maybe I do the carpool. Maybe I make lunches for everybody in my family. We do a lot of things. Maybe I make it to the gym. Maybe I don't. Like, what are you able to do in a normal day? And then when you're feeling really shitty, what are you able to do? I like to always consider that. And if it's taking away some of the things that are really important to you and that make you feel like you, make you feel good, then we should see someone. And in therapy, we know the sooner the better, because something is that I find really interesting, and I'll try to make this not too like nerdy scientist, but there's a term called neuroplasticity. Has anybody heard of it? Yeah, that's good. Yes. Don't be afraid to raise your hands and interact. It makes it more exciting. It is early. And so neuroplasticity, if for those of you who don't know, is really what therapists like myself get excited about. It means you can teach an old dog new tricks. Our brain can change. And I'm not like good with exact definitions, but the way that neuroplasticity works is that our brain will schleff off the bits that it's not using. Okay, so like, oh, I had this thing that I used to do. Okay, I used to play softball. back, like way back, okay? I'm 35. It's been a while. So back when I was like 15, I played softball. My brain had all of these tools for me to like throw the ball. I'm left-handed, so throw the ball this way, I hit this way, this is how I slide into a base. But now at 35, you put me out there, I'm going to hurt myself because I don't know what I'm doing. I'm probably going to do something wrong. I'm going to potentially hurt myself. Also, I'm out of shape. So what my brain has done is it's let go of all that old stuff it's not using. It's like, we don't know, need to know how to bunt right now. That's not important. It's not using it in your life, Katie. So it lets go of that. And my brain moves some things that it needs to and builds up other new skills. It's like a new muscle. So if I'm working now to speak and not get so nervous that I sweat, my brain is building up those muscles. It's getting better. It's feeling more confident. It's feeling more comfortable. And so it's putting more energy into that part. And that's a really cool thing if you think about it, that our brain, and it does this at night, by the way, which is why sleep is so important. It's like your cleaning crew comes in and is like, oh, this stuff is garbage. We don't need that. Move this over here. We're going to use this because this is what we're doing now. And that is a really, really great thing because our brain can change and we can grow and we can get stronger. So if any of you are worried that maybe you do need help and you don't know where to start or what's happening, or maybe you haven't can't quite realize like what maybe your mental health struggles or mental illness is taking from you, just know that the first steps are always the hardest, but our brain changes and it can grow so that these new tools we're learning become like second nature. And so that's just a really cool thing. So know that even if it's hard, it can get better. And some of the tools I'm going to offer today, even if you think there's no way, just try it once. Then maybe try it again. And I promise it's like that every time we learn something new. When you start a new job, do you ever think like, how the hell did I get this? I have no idea what I'm doing. Why did they hire me? I don't know anything. I didn't learn anything in school. And we go through this like panic. But then like 3 weeks in, it's like, this is no big deal. I can totally do this. So consider that when it comes to anything in life. And your mental health is just part of that, okay? See, I already forgot. But we already went through this. Moving on. So the next thing that I hear a lot, let's say that we've decided that we do need some help. We're in therapy. We're working our butt off. We are trying everything we can. But we realize it's not enough. Because seeing a therapist once a week isn't enough for a lot of people. Don't think that that's something that's something's wrong with you or something's weird. I see a lot of my patients twice a week. And I personally even, I'll tell a little story about my own therapy process. When I first, I think it was like my dad had passed away and I started dating my boyfriend, but now husband. I was also in graduate school and I was just going through a lot. And my therapist was like, you're running a marathon. You run a marathon every day, but you know what? Now somebody threw like an 80-pound backpack on you and is like, hey, get out there, run that marathon. And you can't. She's like, it's okay to ask someone to help you carry your bag for you. She's like, that's what I'm there for. So try to think of therapy and therapists in that way that like, hey, if I'm trying as much as I can and it's still too heavy, like once a week I go in for 50 minutes and I barely feel like I've caught them up and then it's time to go, it's okay to ask to go again. And maybe we need to go 3 times a week. And so what I want to get into a little bit, because I think this kind of pertains to all of us, we have very high-pressure jobs and lives. We do a lot. We're all very powerful people. What if we need to take a break? Has anybody ever taken a break from work? More than a vacation? Yeah. It's good. Sometimes for health reasons, right? Sometimes, like when my dad passed away, I took a full week off just for, like, bereavement. Not that a week is much, by the way. That was, like, nothing. I still, like, had a hard time coming back. So how do we talk to people in our lives if we can't show up for them? This, and friends and family is usually the first place that this shows itself because we kind of have to not be there. I can't make it to that birthday party. I can't go with you to that event that I said I would. I don't feel good. Because remember, our mental health is just like our physical health. Would you try to go to that birthday party if you had pneumonia? No. Would anybody talk shit about you? No. So don't think about your mental health any different, okay? If you need to take a break, you need to take a break. And so friends and family are the first people we're going to potentially have to say why. And a lot of people are scared. A lot of people will tell lies just because they're afraid of saying what's really going on. But the good news is I find in my practice, I can without a doubt tell you that if you follow these tips and tools, give the people in your life time to digest, it will work out. They'll understand, okay? And if, like I said, if you have any questions, let me know. I'm happy to talk more about any of these topics. So the first important thing to know, and you have to think about this on your own, don't involve anybody else, maybe your therapist, is what do they need to know? Okay, so we're thinking of telling our friends or family. Think of the word need, not what you want to share. And I know that sounds really counterintuitive, but these conversations are just the start. It's like anything in life. When you first meet someone, you don't meet them and be like, hi, my name is Katie. So my dad died like 10 years ago and it was really hard. And then like, I don't know, my husband and I fought last night and it was, I don't really know why. And then like, oh my God, I had the worst throw up the other day. Like you just don't go telling people stuff like that. And that would be the equivalent of telling them everything. We just need to tell them what they need to know. Okay. So just think about that a little bit while you put together your thoughts. Then we have to figure out how we want to say it. Obviously, we can use soft language. Like if I'm taking a break, I could say, you know, so I've just been feeling kind of down. Maybe I don't want to use the word depressed. Maybe that just feels too loaded. It's okay to put it in your own words. What does it feel like for you? Then, and this is a thing that might take you a while, narrow it down to 3 to 5 bullet points. No more. And the reason I say no more is because I can't tell you how many... If I got paid a dollar every time this happened, I might be able to afford a home in Santa Monica. But I will see parents completely glaze over. Friends and family zone out. I've had a spouse in multiple sessions where the partner's trying to tell them what's going on, and they've done this. They're like, I can't digest anymore. So we have to keep it short so they can hear us. Remember, this is just the start of the conversation. We can always talk again. There's always time to share more. But we want to help them understand up front what we need, what they need to know, okay? Because let's say we're supposed to go on this vacation or we're supposed to take this family trip and we know it's going to be more stress than it's worth for us and we can't, right? We have to remember why we're going to tell them this, what's happening, okay? So 3 to 5 bullet points. And I made an example so that I always write, this is my neuroses here. So let's say I'm struggling with depression, just to give you an example of like how these bullet points could sound or look. Now, the first bullet point would be, you know, I've been feeling depressed, just kind of down lately. So I've been seeing a therapist and it's starting to help. Okay. Bullet point number one, pretty short, right? You get the gist. Now, bullet point number two, it's not anything you did. Obviously, if it is, you know, just leave that part out. It's actually been something I've struggled with off and on for many, many years, okay? So I'm just wanting to let them know it's nothing that happened right now. It's just something that happens to me. Because remember, it's like an illness. If I'm not taking care of myself, I can just start to feel really bad. And my third and final bullet point, I just wanted to tell you so that you understand why I can't get together on Wednesdays anymore after work. I've decided that that's the best time for me to see my therapist. I'm adding on a session. Boom. Done. We've opened the conversation. We haven't overshared. We didn't tell them about our throw up and our weird feelings and how we maybe got in a fight and stuff. They just don't need to know. We've just told them what they need to know and what we need to share now, right? Now we have 2 more bullet points we could add if we need be. Like if it's more complicated than this, you got 2 more. And I would encourage you to like hold one of those for what you might need from them. Let's say we need them to be more supportive at home. So I'm just feeling really maxed out. I can barely get myself together. So if you could just maybe help out in the morning a little more, that would be really helpful, right? That's something you might need from them. Let's say we need to add some money in the budget. So I'm going to need to increase my sessions to 2x a week. I really just need you to support me because the copay is $70 or something. That's what my copay is. Isn't that terrible? But we have to have these conversations. What do we need from them? Maybe we need them to take us. Maybe we only have 1 car in our family. I'm going to need the car that night, or I'm going to need you to take me, or whatever. So that would be another bullet point that you'd want to reserve. It's like, what am I going to need from you? Because the thing that's really great, this is actually a really great thing, a great fact. All the people in our lives are going to want to know what they can do to help. People like to help. And if we don't empower them and have this already in our mind of what we might need from them, they might feel helpless. If you listen to Brené Brown, you might make up a story trying to fill it in, right? So just make sure that you have that in your mind. What What do I need from them? How can they help me? Even if it's just something as simple as, I'd just like you to check in, see how I'm doing. Okay? So those are our bullet points. And then the fourth thing, practice saying it out loud. Whew. Even if it's just to yourself. I always tell people, it doesn't make you crazy to talk to yourself, I promise. This is like all for the benefit of your mental health. So don't think you're crazy. I've even had my patients, I'm like, you know, you go for a walk and you walk your dog, put your earbuds in, pretend you're on the phone. Just practice. Nobody knows. How many times have you looked at someone and said, are they talking to themselves? Oh no, you see the little baby, little white thing hanging out. You're like, ah, they're on the phone. But maybe they're not. Nobody knows. It doesn't matter. So you can practice saying it out loud. Because the thing about when it comes to our mental health, like remember when I went back to, we don't talk about mental illness, we talk about mental health, self-care, wellness, all these soft terms. Even when I was coming to this whole conference, they were like, we want it to be called mental health checkup. And I was like, no one's going to show up. They're going to think they'd put on a paper gown. It's going to get really intense. They're going to be too scared. It's such a loaded term. And it'd be better if it was like managing stress. Sounds so nice, right? And so I think because we have that stigma, we have that worry about what it sounds like, what it feels like, what we think about it, what it means about us. So when we say these words out loud for the first time, when that word depression crosses your lips for the first time, or unhappy, we can often forget what we were saying. We get so caught up in how that sounds, what that means about us, that we forget completely all those bullet points. And so you can write them down, you can bring them with you, but I find practicing what you're going to say, even imagining what they'd say back. Usually, they're friends and family. We know them pretty well. You know, you can always imagine what your mom or your sister or your spouse or your best friend is going to say, or how they react to other people. Imagine it. Kind of role play it out so that you feel really prepared. And practice to the point where you almost feel like you could do it in your sleep. You're so comfortable. The words aren't weird. They're not hard to say. So that when you go and you do it, the last one, you feel good. You're already prepared. It's no big deal. And I find when our energy level is kind of calmer and we act like it's no big deal, they act like it's no big deal. But if we're like, so it's just, I don't even know what to say, and we end up like telling them everything or not telling them anything, then they get nervous too, and they don't know how to help. Remember, we're going to offer them ways to help. We're going to tell them exactly what they need to know, nothing more, nothing less. And we feel confident, then they'll feel confident that you've made a good decision. And then they'll ask how they can support. You give them their answer, and we move on. I think that's really important to know, because not to like go back to Brené's speech, but she's so good, isn't she? But if we don't tell people, people can't read our minds. And if we don't tell them, then they can make up a story. And the stories can be worse than the actual truth. So just give them a little bit of the truth. And then they know how to help and support. Because people will honestly make it personal. I know that when friends of mine have been having a hard time, they'll like flake on plans. And I spend the whole day, I'm like, man, maybe I'm a shitty friend. Did I not show up for them? Like, how come they haven't seen me in like 3 weeks? And I'm starting to spin and make it about me, because that's the only thing I know to do. I don't know why. I always think it's about me. It's never about us, right? It's just always something else. And so if you give them some information, be no storytelling. Just be the truth. Okay. Really gotten off topic. But don't worry, we're back on. So, like I said, if we talk to our friends and family, that tends to be the first people that are going to have to know. But then the biggest worry and the thing I struggle with the most within my own like patients that I see in my practice is, what if I have to take time off from work? Could I get fired? How does that work? And honestly, don't be scared. They cannot fire you. It's actually against the law. So, like, they won't. But also, B, remember that you don't have, just like the friends and family, we don't have to tell them everything. And work, I would be even a little more careful about it, okay? Because the first bullet point is something that I know sounds really dark and terrible, but it's just good that we all know this, because you wouldn't believe the horror stories I've heard online. Luckily, not in my private practice. I'm a pretty good advocate for my patients, I think. But human resources is hired and paid for by your company. Just think about that for a minute. They have the company's best interest. You're not paying them. You're not the reason they continue to have a job. And I know that kind of sucks to hear it that way, because it can sound like, oh, but they're not there to help me. No, they're there to help. Just remember who pays them and who's kind of, we call it CYA, like cover your ass. Whose ass are they covering? It's not your ass. I'm sorry. It's the company. And so just be aware of that and know that you only want to tell them things that you are okay with the whole company knowing. And it's not that they're going to share your information or like broadcast it, but it's just keeping that in mind because unlike a therapist, they're not bound by any confidentiality. There's no like legal things in place to ensure that your privacy is kept private. So make sure that you only tell them the bare bones. And they can even ask for more and you can still say, oh, I'm not comfortable. I enjoy that phrase. I always tell my patients, get really comfortable with saying you're not comfortable. Because they will try to ask you over and over all sorts of things sometimes because it's kind of in their best interest and the company's best interest to know exactly what's going on. But you don't have to tell them. All you have to do, and this is what I recommend doing, is go into your HR department and say, hey, if I had to take a medical leave, that's the term they're looking for, by the way, medical leave, okay? Or you can ask for FMLA, family medical leave, right? If, like, let's say, for instance, one of my really close friends just took FMLA leave, not only because she had a baby, but then her sister had a psychotic break and she had to take some time. It was really scary. We had to get her in the hospital and she was just overwhelmed, right? She just had a baby also, like, hormones just, it was just too much. And so she went to her HR and just said, I think I'm going to have to take some more FMLA. And guess what? She got 4 more weeks. Pretty awesome. And she didn't even have to tell them why. Imagine that. So go into your HR department and ask. Even if you're not thinking of taking leave, I think it's just important to be empowered, be educated about what resources are available. Because how many of you, when you start a job, lose all that paperwork? I lose that paperwork faster than I get to my car. They give you all those pamphlets, and then like a month later, I'm like, wait, I think we have that resource. I have dental. I should sign up for that. Can't find it. I don't know. Like, it's lost in my purse probably. So go in and ask them for what paperwork you would need for the resources if you ever had to take time off. You don't even have to pretend that it's happening now. It's just something we should all do so that we know what resources are available. And they might just, you know, push you off to a site now because most things aren't paper focused, which is fine. But we need to know where to go, how to find it, how to access it. And then we can read through it so we know what benefits are there. And something I really just want to highlight is for all of you to know that there's nothing wrong with taking time for yourself. There's nothing wrong with taking time off to care for your mental health. It's important. It's really hard work, actually. I think it's honestly sometimes easier just to stick our head in the sand. So by taking the time, knowing what your resources are, speaking up and getting help, you're being really brave. And I'm excited for you, okay? I'm rooting for you, even if you're scared. But so go into HR, find out what it is. Find out what they have, find out how you access it. And let's say you do need to take time. You're like, yeah, I'm really overwhelmed. Can't do it. I'm like crying at my desk. Who's ever cried at their desk? I've cried at my desk. It gets overwhelming. And then the last email comes in, and you're like, I can't. You're like, I'm leaving today. This is over. But we can't just do that. So we need to know what resources we have. And the way that it works is you fill out that form. It's usually like 2 or 3 pages for leave. If we're taking some kind of medical leave, it's about 2 or 3 pages. Remember, you don't have to share much. All you have to share is that it's getting too hard for you to complete your work. You're not able to do what you need to do. Kind of, again, back to like what makes a mental illness. We're not able to do all that we need to each and every day. That's all that needs to happen. And then they're going to need a letter from either your therapist or your doctor or both. We write these letters in our sleep. It's not a big deal. Asking us for one isn't going to cost you a lot, or it shouldn't. Don't let them charge you like a shit ton of money. It takes us like 10 minutes, okay? We'll ask you in your appointment, you know, how much do you want me to share with them? What kind of terminology do you want me to use? Like, for instance, I wrote one probably like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I just said, you know, my patient X needs to take a break due to increased levels of stress and inability to complete work tasks. That's all they need to know. It's not their business. So don't let them make you think it needs to say a bunch of stuff, because it really doesn't. It's essentially, I'm saying that as your clinician, I agree that you need a break. They just need my, like, stamp of approval. And the same goes for a medical doctor. Sometimes I'll ask for a psychiatrist or your regular GP, and they write those letters a lot too. You need those letters, You attach that to that form you filled out that's like 2 or 3 pages long. You got your leave. Ta-da! I know it sounds really scary, like it could be overwhelming, or I don't know if they'll grant it, but it's in their best interest to take care of their people, right? It's important that we're doing well and that we're, you know, effective in our jobs. And so if you need a leave, it's important to know that you can take it. And it's really not that big of a deal. But just know that you're going to need those letters, because sometimes it takes my patients like an extra month because they're like, oh, crap, I don't have my next appointment until then. And they're already maxed out, and then they try to squeeze them in, and it just gets to be overwhelming. So if you know this ahead of time, if you're starting to feel a little burnt, we can plan for our next appointment to ask for that letter. So we have it, and then we can use it. Okay? And they will sometimes ask, like, My good friend who took a break recently, every 2 weeks she did have to have another evaluation, another letter from her psychiatrist, and that was easy too. She just essentially had to email it into the HR rep. And again, minimal information. Okay? So know that it's just really not as scary as it sounds, and it's okay to take time. Okay. Now let's say that all this jibber-jabber I've been saying, you're like, that's just not pertaining to me. It's really not that bad. I think I'm just stressed out, because I think that a lot of us are stressed out. That's just life, right? I was preparing this speech, I was pretty stressed out, not gonna lie. But the important thing that I think before we even get into like how to manage stress, because I'll give you some hopefully helpful tools, that was a mouthful, is to differentiate it between anxiety. Because we use terms a lot that like interchangeably, kind of like mental health and mental illness, when they're actually very different. And stress and anxiety are actually very different. Okay? Again, back to my notes. So, when it comes to anxiety, anxiety is something that happens when we feel worried and tense, our blood pressure rises, maybe our palms sweat. A lot of my patients say it feels like they can't catch their breath. Like, I just can't get a full breath of air. It kind of can come out of nowhere. Has anybody felt that way? Like I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll feel fine. I'm totally relaxed. And I go to lay to my head down to go to bed. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, and this is happening. I don't even know. And I'm worrying about anything and everything running through like old conversations I had that aren't even important. That's anxiety. Okay. And we can't control the worry. We worry about everything. Okay. You know, like my grandma always says, I'm just a worrier. I'm like, that's anxiety, grandma. Can't say that to grandma, but you know, she just thinks she's a worry wart. That's what we've called it forever. But that's anxiety. Now stress, what we're going to really talk about, is when we feel that everything that's being asked of us is just too much. I'm overwhelmed. I don't think I can do it all. I'm stressed out. So in short, stress almost always has a cause. We can track it back. If we really think about it, we know what's causing the stress, right? Let's say it's that big work project. I have that presentation. Or I have this relationship issue. It's causing me stress. I'm really worried about how it's going to turn out. It has a cause. Anxiety doesn't always. Every once in a while it will. We'll have like a trigger that pushes us into like a panic attack or something that pushes us over the edge. But that lingering anxiety, like I'm talking about, we try to lay our head down to go to bed and we're like, ugh. You just can't roll around and your mind is racing and you're worrying about everything. That's anxiety. Stress has a cause, which is good news because that means that we can figure out what it is and we can stop it for the most part. Life isn't stress-free. I'm sorry. If you haven't heard that before, I'm sorry to be the first person to tell you. And if any of you don't have any stress, please see me after. I'd like your tips. Okay. So, the important thing about stress, like I said, is because it has a cause. And so there are things that we can do. And I would love, honestly, like in my videos, if you've ever watched any of my content, at the end, I'm always like, hey, if you have any tips, leave them in the comments below. So at the end, if you don't have a question, but you have a good tip of something that's helped, I'd love for us to share that because I don't know everything. And you all have your own experience. And I think that that can be a really powerful and helpful tool as well. So if you have a really cool tip, I encourage you to share it. But if we feel really maxed out and we're super stressed, the first thing we need to do is journal. And it doesn't mean like, dear diary, today was a good day. I was very overwhelmed and I'm not sure why, but I saw my best friend and she was super nice and we had a really, no, you don't have to do that. That's not what I'm talking about. When I mean journaling, when it comes to therapeutic terms and the ways that therapists like myself use it, is to be a detective. Maybe it's because I like Law and Order, but I just like to be a detective. But we can be an emotional detective. We can be a stress detective. I want you to write about how, like, maybe start ranking your stress from 0 to 10. 0 being like, I'm dead. 10 being like, my hair is falling out. I'm so maxed out. Start noticing. Okay, today was a 6. Why? What happened? What are the things that went on this week and this day? And maybe, was my stomach upset? I want you just to start being a detective about how your body feels, how you feel, what's happening around you. Even if it's just bullet points, like, boss was a dick, it happens. A friend was a jerk, had to cancel plans, didn't get presentation done just right, whatever. It could be all sorts of things like that. Came home, forgot to get groceries, ordering out again, feeling guilty, whatever your thoughts are throughout the day, just start kind of tracking them. Because if we don't know what's going on and we don't understand where our stress is coming from, we can't really manage it. You can't just hop in. It'd be like going to the doctor and them not looking at you at all. And you're like, my nose is kind of running. And they're like, oh, it's pneumonia. You'd probably be like, whoa, 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 whoa. You haven't even taken my temperature. You don't even know what's going on. Let's not just like start calling it things that it's not. And the same goes with stress. We have to understand where it's coming from, what's causing it, so that we can treat it. So that's what journaling should be. And don't be afraid of journaling. It could just be notes in your phone. I do that personally. I'm not very good at like taking time. Like I said, I'm no better. I'm not very good at taking time for myself. And so in my notes in my phone, I'll just jot down like, felt road rage today for no reason. Something must be going on. Should talk to therapist. It just starting there is good. Just keeping some little trackers of how you're doing. Then the second point in the way to manage stress is healthy boundaries. And I think a lot of people talk about this, but does anybody want to take a shot at what boundaries are? Because I don't think we really define it. Don't be scared. Anybody? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good, just when you say no, like learning to say no. That's a really, yeah, good. So boundaries are, like we think of boundaries in physical life as like fences, walls. And psychologically, they're not really any different. But they could be like a fence you could squeeze through, or they could be like a brick wall that there's no way around, okay? And boundaries are essentially like me. Let's say that I was talking to you about something, and you were trying to offer advice about my marriage. And I'm like, no, that's just not, I just am not okay taking advice about that. That's just something I'm just not going to do. That's a boundary. Nope. Like, I'm working on a video series, and I'm doing some animation to help explain things like this. And it was really fun talking to the animator, and I was like, no, I want stick figure me to go like this with a big stick, and then go, meh, 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 meh. And they were like, oh. I was like, it's a boundary. I'm like, no. So think of it like that. If you have a friend that is, like, you're the only person they talk to, and you get off the phone, and you've never felt more tired in your ever-loving life. We all have those friends, right? I call them like black holes, or people call them emotional vampires. You're like, oh, that's so much, and you didn't get to say anything about your day. It might be time to put a little boundary up with that friend. I'm only going to pick up the phone or reply to that text when I have that energy to give. So boundaries aren't always, that's why I said they're not just walls. They can be fences. People try to wiggle through. People try to overstep. That little person like, meh, meh, meh. Back on the other end, right? So know that they're sometimes not as easy to put into place, but we can practice. I always like, that's why I call it fences and walls, because I think it takes us a little time to like build them and to figure out where they're going to be. Like if you've ever, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, like on acres of property that some was maybe ours, some was not. Nobody knows, but nobody put up fences, right? So we have to figure out where those boundaries are. Where was the boundary between like our neighbor's house and our house? If there was a fence that they had taken the time to put up, I would know. But, you know, we roamed around because we're country kids. We just climbed any tree, wherever, anytime. Hence, I have tons of scars on my knees and stuff from all the falling. But I say that to say that we might not know where they're going to be yet. We might not have the boundaries, but we'll feel them. So if you are new to boundaries and you're like, I just like to be nice to people. I don't like confrontation. I'm that person. just like to be nice. I just want to be there. I really care about people. That's good. You're a good person. That's not a bad thing. But we can't be there for everybody and be there for ourselves. Right? On our water bottles, I don't know if you guys got the water bottles in your packages too. There's a quote on it. Yes. And it says, what's the quote say? Mm-hmm. I love that. I was like, it's like they're reading my mind. Because you can't, would anybody ask somebody with an empty pitcher to fill their water? That would be crazy. And we can't do the same emotionally. If we are empty, if we're burnt out, and we have nothing left for ourselves, that's not healthy. That's when our mental health becomes a mental illness. And boundaries are what prevents us from continuing to pour until we're empty. We should always stop with a little in the reserve. And so I think that creating these boundaries can really help us. And the way that our body tells us a boundary has been crossed, because without you even doing anything, we already have them. They're like innate, okay? You ever like that drained feeling after the phone call, like I just talked about? That like, or when you look at the phone, you're like, not again. That's a boundary. Your body's like, I can't. Mm-mm. And so it would behoove you to listen and heed its warning. Or do you ever have people like, who just kind of, it's just uncomfortable. They get into topics and ask you questions that you just don't want to talk about. You're like, ooh, no, we are not those types of friends. Or that's too much information. Or you're too close. Mm-mm. That's another natural boundary. Your body's like, mm-mm, we don't know each other that well. I'm not okay talking about that. Those are all good indications of boundaries. So that's kind of back to the journaling. Like paying attention to how you feel can give us so much information. It honestly holds all the answers to all of our problems because we just never take the time to really listen. And so if we listen and notice how we feel, then we can figure out where those boundaries lie. When can I work and not work? Am I feeling really tired and burnt and I just don't have anything left to give? My body's sending me that signal. Maybe I should back off. The third tip is organization and planning. And that is essentially what we already know. Make lists, accomplish those lists. Make time for breaks. Did you know that the brain can only focus for 30 to 45 minutes at a time? Why on earth are college classes so long? That's my question. Also, like, this is an hour. That's a lot of focus. Sweet Jesus, we need a break. Because our brains just cannot stay that focused for that long. Have you ever reread a paragraph and been like, I have no idea what that was? I do that all the time. Even when I'm not doing anything else, I can be on a plane reading, like, I don't know, something from Marie Claire. I'm like, I don't even know what I read. Because my brain needs a break. Maybe I just need to go like this for like 10 minutes, right? Just recharge, reboot. So make sure that you aren't doing things for more than 30 to 45 minutes. You're planning in breaks. And we also know to-do lists shouldn't be longer than 7 items, okay? And I know that sounds crazy. And the one item can't be like complete project or organize whole house. We'll never get that done. These items need to be achievable in one day, okay? Easy tasks, no more than 7. And then using healthy, for a second I was like, did I say unhealthy? I did not. Using healthy coping skills. So when we start to feel maxed out, what do we do instead? This doesn't mean, unfortunately, shopping, drinking, eating. Those tend to be our 3 go-tos because they're soothing. The thing that we should all know is that those like activate the reward system in our brain. So we're like, ooh, I got this new item. Yes. And then does anybody else like 2 days later, you're like, why did I buy that? What am I doing? Wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, such regret. Why did I hit? I should have left it in the cart and X'd out. I knew it. So know that those things do trigger your reward system, but it doesn't make it any better. Things that make it better are things like calling a supportive friend, talking to a therapist, going for a walk, petting an animal. There's all sorts of different things we can do. Maybe painting your nails, rubbing your feet, asking your spouse to rub your shoulders or your feet, or watching your favorite show. Find some things that are healthy and good for you and make time for it. And write these things down, because trust me, when we're feeling really terrible, boo, we got nothing. We're like, shop, eat. We'll find other things and then write them down and make them accessible on your phone, like in your notes again. I love the notes section, if you couldn't tell. Okay, and then finally, get help. Maybe you're finding that your stress level is just getting too high and you're trying all these things. You're like busting your ass and it's just not feeling better. it's okay to reach out. That's when maybe our stress is becoming maybe more of an anxiety thing, right? It's coming, turning from mental health to mental illness. We just need a little extra support. We need someone to pick up a little bit of that weight from us, right? And take it off our shoulders so we can get through it. And it's okay to ask for help. Okay, I talk a lot and I'm running short of time. Okay, now this is where I'll end. I'll do this one last because I think this is really helpful. How to have uncomfortable conversations. I hate those. I hate confrontation. I don't like disappointing people. I don't like thinking that someone could yell at me. I like want to crawl inside myself and die, right? It's just, it's too much. I get overwhelmed. And so these tips really help myself and my patients stop fights in their tracks and make things better and work towards a actual like resolution. Imagine if we could just reach a solution together, a good compromise, right? And the first communication tip I have is to stick to the facts. And I know this sounds really silly, but stick into your, like, we know how we have two, I always think we have two minds. We have emotion mind that's like, oh no, you didn't. I can't believe it. This is terrible. You're such a jerk. That's like, has anybody seen Inside Out? It's like that little angry guy that's like, oh my God, no, you did it. And he's like always just throwing a fit. It's like us as a three-year-old. It's like tantrum mode. That's our emotion mind, and it serves its purpose. But then the other is wise mind that's like, you know, maybe now's not the time to bring that up. I can tell that he's already on edge or she's already had a rough day. I'm going to wait till tomorrow. That's wise mind. Stick to the facts is all in your wise mind. What actually happened? Only what happened, not how I felt about it. Tease that out. So let's say I'm really mad because my friend said they were going to show up for me and they didn't. I would say, you know, when last week when you told me that we were going to go to this event together, I was really looking forward to it. And then when you didn't, that was a bummer. That's just what happened. It's a little bit emotion because I said bummer and like I was excited, but I kept it as stick to the facts as possible. Because when we get into that emotion mind, we end up yelling, we end up being kind of passive aggressive, and it will stop any real conversation from being had. You know, where you're somebody, you can just tell they're not listening to you. When we've reached that emotion component, we're like, oh, not getting anywhere. So try to stick to the facts, which moves nicely into no passive aggression. And I don't think people actually know what passive aggression maybe really is. We don't define it a lot. But essentially what it means is that we don't have the words to tell them how we feel, and so we just act out instead. Maybe we hide their shoes so they're late for work. We wouldn't do that. Maybe we purposely don't go to the grocery store so that when they get home and they're hungry, we've already eaten. Maybe we picked up food on the way home. We can do little things that are just kind of piss people off because we're really upset. We're trying to express our upset without actually communicating to them. No one can read our minds. No one knows we're upset if we don't tell them we are and we don't tell them why. Try to remember that. Try to remind myself that of like every day so that I'm not passive aggressive. Then the next is take turns. Make sure you listen to what they're saying. Don't yell over them. Let them know, yeah, so what you're saying is, we wrap it up. What did I hear you say? And then we flip-flop it, right? Then I get to say how I feel. They should be able to repeat back. There's a tool I use in my office called the floor. And the only two rules are, you can't talk over one another, and you can't read their minds. So you have to say what happened from your perspective. They have to repeat that they heard you. If you agree that, yes, that's what I said, you heard me correctly, you swap the floor over. You share your side, and they repeat back. This will stop any fight from happening. It's very simple. It really just means we don't listen to each other. When we talk, we just, like, shut down. Have you ever gone into an argument and been like, I've already won. I don't even need to hear your side. I already know I'm right. I do that all the time. Especially with my husband, because I'm like, dude, I know you did not take the garbage out. You said you were. You left your hairs all over the sink from shaving your face. I'm already mad. And you said you cleaned up, and you definitely didn't. There's no fight here. I already won. So we have to make sure we don't do that. We slow it down. We hear their side. And the fourth is ask questions. So we don't make up stories. We don't make assumptions. Ask some clarifying questions. So were you really mad about that, or what actually happened today? You seemed upset. Is this something that I did? Was this what made you mad? I think that that's what it is. Even if we have assumptions, it's okay to clarify and see if that's actually right and if it's true. it's okay to ask questions. Don't be scared. It actually stops fights because often we've made up a whole thing. Like even Brené's story about her husband and the ham. She thought it was this whole ordeal, and he was like, I was just hungry. I don't know how this got so out of control. But we've made up all these stories. And so just ask some questions to clarify. And finally, and you knew this one was coming, be open to compromise. We can't always get what we want. I had to fight the urge to sing that. I'm not going to lie. Anybody know that song? You have to know that song, right? Okay, good. I'm like, am I too old? I'm not too old. But be open to compromise, because the only way we can get everything we want all the time with no issues is if we're like alone forever with nobody else. I don't know about you, but can't handle that kind of isolation. We like people. So we have to compromise. Doesn't mean you should always give in to what they want, and it doesn't mean they should always give in to what you want. You should be able to go back and forth or reach something like in the middle. Like, maybe we don't do this today, but can we do it next weekend? Yes, perfect. Maybe I don't use that one word when I talk to you because that always upsets you. Got it. Okay, well, when you use this tone, I get upset. Got it. We're going to have to compromise. We're going to have to work together, because no matter what type of relationship we're talking about, all these tools are really important. But I know we're running out of time. I guess we'll move it into questions. Okay? Yeah.
Hi, I have two quick questions. The first is, so thanks for speaking. I'm such a big advocate for therapy, but it's really expensive.
Yeah.
So the first question is, how do you suggest people like budget therapy into their lives? Like, some sessions can be up to like $200. Mm-hmm. And the second question is, going back to the other side about journaling, have you ever found people that actually, like, journaling makes them feel worse?
Because yes.
Because you're, like, acknowledging the way you feel and, like, writing it down and thinking about it even more than, like, had you actually...
Like, ignored and not journaled.
Acknowledged it and moved on.
Totally. You know? So first question is all about therapy, and it's so expensive. Why is it so expensive? How do we pay for it? And I have a couple of tips. So the first thing is, you can always ask a therapist if they work on a sliding scale. I know that some people are afraid to talk about money. It's okay to talk about money. This is an expensive cost that we're going to incur at least once a week, every week, for we don't know how long yet. And I've seen patients for free. I've seen patients for $30. I've seen patients for my full fee. It just depends on the ability to pay. So if it's really hard and you're like, hey, my budget is $70 or $50, it's okay to ask. And they'll let you know right up front. We leave room in our schedules for people who can't afford it. So know that it's okay to ask. And then there are online resources. There's a lot of online therapy apps like, I'm trying to think of what it's called, BetterHelp, Talkspace. And those are much more reasonable in cost. But they're not in person. They're done over Skype, or you can do emails or texts if you just want a little extra support. And that's a good resource as well as free clinics. Find clinics in your area. Go. You can even call your local hospital and say, hey, do you have any like free therapy clinics in the area? They'll usually know. Or if you go to that therapist and they're like, oh, I can only go down to $100, and you're like, whoa, you can say, well, do you have any referrals for like free or cheaper treatment? They should have some that they can pull out of their Rolodex. There's one in North Hollywood. It's called the CIFC. I used to work there. I worked for free. Actually, I had to pay for supervision. It's awesome being a therapist sometimes. but it's good, because then people who need the help get it.
Hi. Thank you so much, Katie.
Uh-huh. One more second. She had a second part of her question.
Oh, she had a second question. Okay.
And that part was
journaling.
Sometimes if we have anxiety, if that's part of the stress and anxiety, journaling can lead to more rumination, which can make us feel worse. And so either only do bullets, or write it and tear it up so you don't read it back, or don't do journaling at all. It's okay. You can find other coping skills. Other things to do instead of that journaling would be to do like feelings charts, and you just circle the feelings that you felt. Remember, because so we're still tracking, but we're not giving our brain enough space to like really go to town. We're just going to circle. And you can Google feelings charts and all these lists of like angry, sad, mad, elated, you know, all those. How do you feel today? Those things will pop up. Print some of those off and just highlight or circle. It'll be a good way to kind of get back, like get in touch with how you feel. Cool. Okay. Sorry. Continue.
Hi. My name is Michael Ann Conley, and I'm a therapist as well. I loved your metaphor about the marathon, and I wonder, would it be okay if I shared some really great news for people in the 21st century?
Of course.
I'm an integrative mental health practitioner, and what everybody needs to know, what you were talking about, the difference between mental health and mental illness, is that more and more is being discovered that a lot of mental illness symptoms are actually biologically driven, and there's new medicines. So, you know, most of us aren't mentally ill. Most of us have problems in living, and there are new solutions that are nutraceutical. There's new treatments. So there is no reason to begin to think that you're this way because of your personality. In fact, a lot of conventional therapy is treating you as if it's your personality, when in fact, if there are medical conditions that are going on in your gut or other parts of your body, those can create cognitive issues. So there's a lot of good news out there for anyone who's having these kind of difficulties.
Definitely.
There are new solutions.
Yeah,
and
well, thank you for sharing.
There was so much here to unpack. I just absolutely loved what you said. Thank you so much for bringing this forward.
And I had more, too. Sorry. I end up, like I told them, I was like, I practiced at home, but I'm probably going to talk a lot more when I get up there. Any other questions? Yes, in the white.
Very close, their family.
Yeah.
It becomes draining to be there for them.
The best way, if we're able, and I know people are going to be like, oh, is to talk to them about it. But instead of playing the blame game where we're like, you're doing this and I'm feeling this, it's best to say, so I've just been feeling really maxed out in my life. And you know, I've been feeling really overwhelmed, you know, just kind of make it like a little conversation and say, and so if I'm just not as available to you as I used to be, I apologize, but I'm just taking some time to work on myself and I hope you'll understand. And 9 times out of 10, they'll be like, oh, I had no idea. Or, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, of course I understand. And so that gives you that room and almost that permission, because we have trouble giving ourselves permission to take care of ourselves. I don't know why that is. We take care of so many people, but it's okay. You have to take care of yourself. Again, that pitcher metaphor. So that's what I would encourage you to do. And then know that it can be a continual conversation. So if they do come back and say, hey, you didn't pick up and blah, blah, blah. You can say, remember, I'm taking care of myself. I'm doing the best I can. So make it about you, not about them. That's when they'll be able to hear it. Yes.
Hi. That was a really good talk. I appreciate you bringing up this subject because I know there's a lot of stigma around it. I had a question about what you suggest in terms of when you're looking for someone to speak to, because I've had kind of both experiences where I had free access in grad school to counselors, which was amazing. Yeah. And I miss that.
I know.
And I was really fortunate that I found a counselor who was very, she was really good, really excellent. You know, helped me kind of dissect what I was doing, but never said, this is what you should do. She didn't pass judgment, any of that. Then, you know, I'd found somebody else who kind of did it. Like, I felt like I would explain something and then I have to be like, defend what I just said because they, on, you know, two meetings, I felt like they were passing judgments on what I was saying. And I was kind of like, you don't even know me or my background.
Yeah, see somebody else.
Right. So what is your suggestion in terms of how to find someone who's the right fit? And also because it's, you know, when you're not in grad school, it's expensive. Yeah. So how do you kind of go about that?
Yeah. I go in a huge deeper dive into this if you really are worried about like how to find the right person. In my book, Are You Okay? It came out in December. I talk about like starting therapy, how to know kind of all the stuff we talked about today, but like much more detailed. And when it comes to finding a therapist, the best thing you should, I guess there's a few things you should look for, but the best thing you should feel is just comfortable. You know, when you walk into some offices and you're like, it's like a doctor's office is super cold, right? The walls are white. Like they make you sit on that crinkled paper thing and you're like, oh, this is so noisy and sticking to me. And so you should just feel comfortable in their office. Their couch should feel comfortable, the chair, whatever. And you should feel like they hear you. They make eye contact appropriately. They nod along. They ask clarifying questions. You feel like they're on your side rooting for you. And that you kind of feel like you could trust them. It's almost like meeting a new friend. Like we're all meeting new people, right? And you ever meet people like, they're nice. They seem really nice. That's kind of how you should feel. And I know therapy's different and they're asking you a lot of questions and they're not giving you much back, but you should still have that same kind of inkling. And there, I have, in my book, I talk about like the red flags, and even on my channel, you can look up just Katie Morton, red flags, bad therapist. I talk about how to know, and that's like if you feel like you need to validate, like you're the one trying to validate your experience, where you're like, no, no, it was really bad. It was. They should never downplay. They should never use words like, oh, just, like, oh, you just felt, like, therapists, we have to be very aware of how we speak to our patients so that they know we hear them and they feel heard and understood. And, like, we call it, like, the holding environment. We're like, it's okay. And so just kind of look out for those things. Make sure that they remember most, like, your name and the things you're working on. And overall, just go with your gut. I know that's easier said than done, but... And I'm sorry we're out of time, but thank you so much for coming. Thanks for your attention. I hope it was helpful.